Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From Tea Party rallies to the progressive blogosphere to Main Street, there's a powerful sense in the country today that Congress isn't working for the people it's supposed to represent. You can see the overwhelming sentiment in every poll. What to do about it is another matter. My guests today want dramatic action. Legal scholar Lawrence Lessig wants a constitutional convention to drive big money influence off Capitol Hill. Jonathan Turley wants to break the two-party lock on power. This hour, On Point, immodest proposals for changing the game in Congress. You can join the conversation. Is it time to open up the Constitution to find a fix for Congress? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Lawrence Lessig and Jonathan Turley join us in a moment. First, a look at moves on Capitol Hill to push back against the recent Supreme Court ruling inviting corporate and labor money directly into political campaigning. Stephen Dinan, political reporter for The Washington Times, joins us from Washington. Stephen, thanks for being here. What's going on Capitol Hill? Who's pushing what here, Stephen?
Well, the Democrats have, after the Supreme Court ruling, the Democrats immediately came out and said they would try and walk it back as much as possible. There are options ranging from a constitutional amendment. Senator Dodd from Connecticut has said that he will introduce a constitutional amendment that would basically give Congress the power to regulate corporate and union, regulate corporate and union ad spending essentially their ability to play in politics, which would overturn, that would be a flat-out essential overturning of the decision. There's a proposal that's been floating around for a while that's gotten some new momentum now that would actually create a voluntary public financing system for congressional campaigns, essentially allow a 4-to-1 match for every small dollar contribution that somebody raised under $100. There would be a 4 times that contribution match from the federal government, essentially, you know, leveraging the power of the government so that you wouldn't have to be dialing for dollars all the time, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But it looks like more likely Representative Chris Van Hollen from Maryland and Senator Schumer from New York were actually given the responsibility by the party leaders in both the Senate and the House to come up with what would be the leadership bill. And they're likely to do that sometime here this week. They're going to tell us what their principles are. But it sounds like they're looking at things that can actually pass in the next few months so that it could be in place for the 2010 election.
So that the impact of the court's decision in Citizens United would not roll straight into the midterm election and its influence. Like what, Stephen?
So some of the options, one of the things, and the president highlighted this in a State of the Union address, very famously getting the angry head shaking from Justice Alito, but the president said that foreign corporations could conceivably be allowed to run ads under at least some interpretation of the ruling.
Maybe through their American subsidiaries.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that's almost certain to happen is that Mr. Van Hollen and Mr. Schumer will come up with some way to try and create restrictions on foreign-controlled subsidiaries here in the U.S.
Exactly. Okay.
Another option would be to actually, this is an intriguing one, to go after anyone who takes a substantial amount of federal contracting dollars and tell them that they can't essentially run political ads from their general treasury, paid for from their general treasury. The thinking there being that if they're taking government taxpayer money, then, you know, all money's fungible. They're essentially in some way using taxpayer money to go run ads to lobby or fight for or against a particular political candidate.
Right.
That would be unseemly in some interpretation. So that's another very real option. And then disclosure is a big one, making sure that the companies can't form, and this also applies companies and unions, that they can't form sham corporations or sham organizations and essentially hide behind them. You know, these things you hear, these, you know, Americans for Clean Skies or something like that, which is actually funded by energy companies that are presumably, you know, not looking for clean skies.
What are the chances of something passing here, Stephen? Is there bipartisan support in here for a change?
You know, that's in the House, it's, of course, almost certain that something could pass, just given the numbers Democrats have there and the interest that the Democratic Party has to want to do this. The Senate's a much tougher issue, obviously. There's been Senator McCain, who was very involved in campaign finance from years back, was sort of lukewarm. He definitely didn't like the Supreme Court decision, but was sort of unclear whether he thought there was a way to do anything about it at this point. There's Senator Olympia Snowe from Maine has been a little more clear in saying that action needs to be taken. You know, so there's a chance that you could get her on board, and Democrats, if all Democrats were to support it, you could get your 60 filibuster proof majority in the Senate. But it's going to be a tough hurdle to get to 60. I mean, it's a Supreme Court ruling, especially based on First Amendment principles, as contentious and divided as this one was. A Supreme Court ruling on First Amendment principles is tough to overcome.
But a push there in Congress to do something, we'll be watching as that unfolds. Stephen Dynan, political reporter with The Washington Times. Stephen, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
In his State of the Union address last month, President Obama criticized the Supreme Court's ruling on Citizens United versus the FEC, Federal Elections Commission. With the justices sitting right in front of the podium, the president said their 5-4 decision would throw the gates open to corporate funding in elections.
With all due deference to separation of powers, last week the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our election. I don't think American elections should be bankrolled by America's most powerful interests, or worse, by foreign entities. They should be decided by the American people. And I'd urge Democrats and Republicans to pass a bill that helps correct some of these problems.
We're looking this hour at some big ideas for fixing what may be wrong with Congress, maybe bigger than the president's talking there. Joining me now from White Plains, New York, is Lawrence Lessig, professor of law at Harvard University, director of its Center for Ethics. He's co-founder of the advocacy group Change Congress, formed to fight the influence of big money in Congress. His article in the February 22nd edition of The Nation is How to Get Our Democracy Back. Lawrence Lessig, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here.
You say it's not enough to push through legislation, maybe like Stephen Dynan was describing for us in Congress, to simply blunt the impact of the court's decision on corporate and labor campaign spending. Why is that not enough?
Well, if the Congress succeeds in reversing the effect of Citizens United, which I don't think they actually can, because I think the Supreme Court will be very aggressive in overturning whatever Congress does here, it'll just get us back to the world that we had a month ago. And that world was already a world with a hopelessly dysfunctional Congress, a Congress that was not responsive to the people, but is constantly focused on raising money and therefore constantly focused on interests that allow special interests to stop any substantial reform. It's that problem we need to solve. And the way we solve that problem is to radically change the economy of influence that they live under, meaning make it possible for them to run for office without spending all of their time trying to raise money from big dollar contributors.
Your bottom line is pretty harsh. You say democracy has failed.
Absolutely. And I think that's the recognition that people from across the political spectrum have. People on the right who have seen 20 years of conservative presidents out of the last 29 but have not yet seen smaller government or simpler taxes recognize this point. That's the movement behind the Tea Party. And people on the left who thought, you know, we had a majority, supermajority in Congress and a new progressive president, but he has yet to be able to deliver on the core promises that he made because special interests have stopped these changes in Congress. So it's this institution that I think we need to focus on fixing. And until we fix Congress first, we're not going to be able to get any of the reforms from either political side of the spectrum through this Congress.
And the path that you're promoting is one that the framers of the Constitution gave us, but it has never been used. And that is a constitutional convention. How does that work, and to do what, Lawrence Lessig?
Well, I actually think that what Congress should do right now is pass what was described in the first segment, the Fair Elections Now Act, that would make it possible for congresspeople to run in a voluntary way with small dollar contributions only. They could do that tomorrow, and that would radically change the way the system works. But if they don't do that, what I've said is
this is the one, the act that would give members the option to rely on small dollar contributions, maximum of $100 a citizen, period.
That's right. And this bill now has 134 sponsors in the House and 10 sponsors in the Senate. And if the president were to get behind this bill, then that would radically change the system even without an amendment. And that's the thing I support first. But if they don't do that, I think we've got to begin the long process of figuring out how to reform this institution, and that is a convention. Now, the convention has been used in the past. There hasn't yet been a convention, but the only time that Congress ever voluntarily changed its own power was with the 17th Amendment, where the Senate was changed from a body appointed by the state legislatures to a body appointed by the people through direct elections. Mm-hmm. And the reason the 17th Amendment was proposed by Congress is that there was a constitutional convention on the way to being formed. And to avoid the convention, Congress proposed that amendment. And so in a direct way, that convention created the pressure necessary to force reform. Now, I want reform. Though as an academic, it would be fun to see a convention. That's not my objective. My objective is reform. And we need to get it one way or the other. We either get it from Congress doing the right thing, or we get it by beginning the process of getting states around the country. There needs to be 34 states calling for a convention, and then a convention that proposes amendments that then have to be ratified by 38 states before they become part of the Constitution.
And you're talking reform one way or another that would drive money somehow out of politics. We've become so used to it, it's hard to even picture that. We just got 20 seconds before the break. What's the bare bones description of what that would look like?
It would be a Congress where Congress people were once again dependent upon the people and not dependent upon the funders. They are distracted right now, like a guy doing texting as he's driving down the highway. Instead of texting, they need to focus on their job, and that is representing the people.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about proposals after the big Supreme Court ruling on campaign finance to rebuild Congress, maybe from the bottom up, with less money, more parties, a radical restructuring, pulling the emergency cord on the U.S. Congress for a restart, a kind of rebuild. Lawrence Lessig, law professor at Harvard University, joins us from White Plains, New York today. Interestingly, former clerk for Supreme Court Justice, now Antonin Scalia. From Arlington, Virginia, we're joined by Jonathan Turley, also constitutional law scholar, professor of public interest law at George Washington University. His op-ed in the LA Times today is titled, Real Political Reform Should Go Beyond Campaign Finance. Jonathan Turley, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
So looking at the money is not enough. You're looking at the parties. What do you want to do there?
Well, I think that there has always been an emphasis on campaign finance that I think has been overwhelming and unfortunate. I think the problem here is not the fuel, but the machine itself. And we need to look at the dysfunctional aspects of the political system. You know, the fascinating thing is that some of the framers, particularly George Washington, never wanted to see the creation of political parties. That was, I think, rather naive. But it is also fascinating that if you look from the beginning of the Republic, it has largely been dominated by two parties, whether they're Federalists and Jeffersonians or what later became the Democratic-Republican Party. We've basically had a very limited choice in this country. It's sort of like Ford's promise, you can have any color as long as it's black. In this country, you can have any change as long as it's blue or red, as long as it's Democratic or Republican.
But people have talked about that, it seems, from the beginning of time, Jonathan, and it never changes. How would you change it?
Well, I think that's why this moment is so interesting. The Supreme Court decision may force a sort of paradigm shift, may force us to look at other issues. And if we are going to amend the Constitution, which is what some members want to do with campaign finance, what I'm suggesting is that we go for real reform, and that is to break up this duopoly, this monopoly on power. And you can do it a number of ways. I mean, first of all, you can end the practice of gerrymandering, the way in which parties really distort congressional districts in order to maximize members of their own party. We can break down barriers to third parties that are quite pronounced in many states. Most importantly, we can change the primary system to break the control of incumbents. That is, there is one alternative primary system where the two top vote getters, regardless of their party, go into the general election. So there are some states which are never going to elect a Democrat or Republican, but they most certainly might throw out an incumbent if they had a choice. And then my article also goes into things like abolishing the Electoral College and requiring a president to be elected by majority vote. All of these things would go into a mix to allow more voices to be heard, but more importantly, to break that monopoly.
If you had more voices, but they're all still essentially, you know, funded by in a decision making way by big money, how does it change the picture, Jonathan?
Well, I think that a lot of the objections to the Citizens United decision are rather misplaced. I mean, the people seem to have a very short memory. That was only about a month ago, and that was not exactly a period of good government where everyone celebrated the status quo.
You mean before a month ago? That's true.
Yeah, and I think that returning to that status, which is what a lot of members want to do, serves very few people except those currently in power. More importantly, that decision divided the liberal community significantly. Many people on the free speech side, and I would include myself in that group, supported the result but not necessarily the reasoning of the opinion, because we simply did not like the government making this choice that Fahrenheit 9/11 by Michael Moore is not electioneering but Hillary the movie is.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't feel uncomfortable with that. And so campaign finance limitations should be part of the mix. There's no question about that. But it's not going to make significant reforms, not until we break this duopoly, not until we break down the barriers to new voices coming forth.
Lawrence Lessig, where's the root of our problem here, the parties or the money the parties run on?
Well, I think your question was exactly the right question. We supposedly have two parties right now, but the money turns them into a single party. So look at the story reported last week in the New York Times about Democrats and Republicans both racing to Wall Street to suck up to Wall Street, to get Wall Street to give them the money that they need to run for re-election, promising Wall Street to give Wall Street what Wall Street wants, even though we gave Wall Street what Wall Street wanted, and that led us into the economic catastrophe that we're just still trying to get through.
And we're supposed to be talking about re-regulating, but that won't happen if Wall Street's got its fingers on all the buttons.
Absolutely. So the point is that both sides begin to sing the same tune to the powerful interests that are going to give them the money to get back into office. And until we change that structure so that they don't have to sing to the tune of Wall Street or to the auto industry or to the big banks or to the pharma or to the insurance companies, we're not going to get any real change. Now, I don't oppose the idea of having more parties, but the question is, what change do we do first so that these other changes are possible? And when there is so much power in the money interest to control how these different parties behave, we're not going to get any other change until we break that problem first.
A constitutional convention is a huge, long, difficult process. Maybe could never happen. But if you could snap your fingers and have it happen, what outcome would you like to see? What would it look like? What's the amendment you'd put in the Constitution?
Well, the first I would put in is an amendment that created an obligation on Congress to protect its own independence from these special interests by funding elections in a way that makes it possible for members to be focused on the people. That's the dependency that is supposed to be built into a democracy. So they would have an obligation to fund, whether it's through vouchers or through tax credits or through the bottom-up proposal that's being considered right now. That's a detail. The critical point is their funding of elections needs to be no longer so firmly connected to private interests that they can focus on their job. They spend between 30 and 70% of their time raising money. We pay them to be legislating in a sensible way. They take their money that we pay them, and then they spend all of their time trying to raise money to just get back into office.
So
that's
you would
the change
exclude corporate money, labor money, any kind of big agglomerations of money?
No, I think Jonathan's right that this decision has split the liberal community, because my view is we need free speech from the widest range of entities, whether they're persons or not, right? Mm. So it's not that I think that a corporation's a person and therefore it has a free speech right. It's because I think we need a diversity of speech. But we need to also have the power, and so the amendment I would propose would have this power too, for Congress to make sure that no interest, whether it's a corporation or a private individual, can spend in a way that so disproportionately affects the election that people no longer believe that the representative is independent, that once again we've created the same dependency that we have right now.
So my focus
is just how to make Congress function the way the framers imagined it would function.
We'll look at more on how that might work, how getting beyond two parties or a duopoly might work. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join us here. Ned in Afton, Virginia. Ned, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks, Tom. I'm 64 years old, and I've followed this kind of thing most of my life, and I'm actually just outraged at this Supreme Court decision. It's like a slap in the face of democracy, and the commenters are right. We don't have a democracy anymore. The word I use for it is a corpocracy, and I think some of the suggestions they're making will help, but I don't think anyone is smart enough at this time to know exactly what these changes would be. What I would like to know, and I'm sure some other listeners would like to know, who are also outraged, is what can they do to make this constitutional convention happen? There's a huge grassroots swelling out there that want to take this over and to make it happen.
What can citizens do? Lawrence?
Yeah, so I think the first point that the caller made was absolutely right. We don't know right now what the right answer is. And I think we need a long conversation about that with lots of different perspectives from the right and the left that try to focus on this. And that's what I think the convention gives us the opportunity to do. Now, we've launched this process, and you go to a website, callaconvention.org, all one word, callaconvention.org, and you can begin to join the process that will include trying to facilitate the widest range of deliberation and debate by all sorts of people about exactly what this convention should be. And eventually, the organizing mechanism to begin to get states to pass the call that they need in order to get a convention. But it's going to be a long process. It's a serious issue. It's not the sort of issue we can resolve on Twitter or through an internet poll. We need to take it seriously and focus on it for a period of time, and that's why I think a convention is so important.
Jonathan, are you looking at a convention as maybe a path to breaking the party duopoly you're looking at? Are you worried about calling a constitutional convention, opening Pandora's box? I mean, who knows what would come out of that ultimately?
Well, I agree with Lawrence that I have little expectation that Congress is going to make serious reforms. After all, at least in my view, they are much of the problem, so they are not going to be much of the solution. I do think it's very useful to call for that convention. As I say in the column today in the LA Times, I think that the convention has to be limited to political reform so that we don't let it be taken over by abortion and gay rights and all the other issues that divide us. We need to focus on a pure political reform convention. But I wanted to say to Ned, there's another thing you can do, and that is some of the reforms that go beyond campaign finances, you can do on the state level. I mean, for example, you can change your primary system to allow the top vote getters to run in the general election.
Not just a single one, but maybe two or three or whatever.
You can also effectively circumvent the Electoral College by saying that your state's electoral votes will be distributed by the popular vote. So there's things that you can do even without a conventional, without a constitutional convention that I think would be very worthy. And I think the important thing is to harness this passion. I mean, I've never seen the country so united across the board. And when I speak at universities around the country, whether it is in Utah or in New York, they are absolutely appalled by our current leaders, by our political system, and how dysfunctional it is.
Let's go to Cookeville, Tennessee, and Todd. Todd, you're on the air.
Thanks. I've just been concerned for some time now about the amount of money that's required to run for office, and it seems to me it sort of throws, for the average person that's concerned about the political process, to be able to mount a campaign, it almost seems you have to be independently wealthy to get going. I worked in commercial media for about 15 years, and every election season it was just boom time almost. The way the laws are set up, where the politicians go to the commercial radio and commercial television to talk about their own campaigns, they have to pay for all those ads, and there's laws regulating how much they pay. They pay the lowest going rate. And I saw people manipulate rate cards to where the politicians had to pay more than their regular clients had to pay more. It's a massive, massive amount of money that changes hands. I guess my point is that, you know, media airwaves aren't like real estate where they're mined, they're owned, it's property. The airwaves, as far as I understand, belong to the American people. And if the idea is to remove the demand for money, the need for money in the campaign, why can't Congress enact some sort of mechanism whereby media is obliged to give some time to the politicians, to give a debate to the politicians, which they do already, but also time for their own campaign messages, which would then not require the amount of money that they need to spend in big media.
Of course, you can imagine how your former media outfits would lobby on that, Todd, but we'll look at it, and I thank you for your call. Lawrence, first to you on that. Yes, it's very expensive, and now there's going to be corporate and labor money in there as well. Could we change what's required of broadcasters to make this more possible, or how would you get it done? What do you call it, the Fair Elections Now Act would just limit what people could spend to contributions of $100 per citizen, period, for campaigns. I guess, would that do it, or can you get into what the broadcasters themselves charge?
Well, one of the reasons Senator Durbin sponsored the Fair Elections Now Act in Senate is that he was tired of the effective subsidy that he felt he was performing by raising all this money that was being handed over to television stations, when television stations, as the caller notes, use the airs for free because we've given it to them and allocated it to them like that. But the reality is that the Supreme Court would overrule any decision by Congress to force these stations to carry at low cost or no cost political speech. They would see that as a regulation of speech itself. Now, if you funded elections properly, which I think the Fair Elections Now Act could do, then, of course, it would be expensive, and we would all be paying for it, but at least you would make it possible for people to be running these ads without spending all of their time sucking up to companies like Wall Street or the insurance companies.
Let's go to Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Tom, I'm a little suspicious of the ire of progressives against this Supreme Court decision.
Mm-hmm.
The progressive candidate Barack Obama disavowed public financing for his campaign, and he ended up spending $800 million, I think more than $800 million, twice that of McCain, more than in the previous election cycle than both candidates. And I didn't hear a peep out of progressives about how much money and how he had bought the campaign. Now I'm hearing how terrible money is.
Steve, it's a good point. We're coming up on the break. Jonathan Turley, what about it? Is there an irony in that?
Well, there's more than irony. There's certainly hypocrisy. You know, when I saw many of the Democrats coming out after the opinion who were denouncing the corporate takeover of Congress, these are the same members that just caved in to every lobbyist that walked into their office on national health. And the other thing to remember is that even though we control the financing, incumbents actually benefit from that to some extent, because incumbents have a sort of fixed advantage in these elections. So as you reduce the money, it actually can increase the incumbent power. And all the polls show that people really want to see a greater turnover in Congress. They have a very low view of Congress as a whole. But they often have only one choice, effectively, in their districts, because they want to vote for a particular party, and that is always going to be the incumbent in these very solidly red or blue districts.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about proposals after the big Supreme Court ruling on campaign finance to rebuild Congress from the bottom up with less money, more parties, a radical restructuring. Jonathan Turley of George Washington University and Lawrence Lessig of Harvard, legal scholars, join us. Let's go to William in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. William, you're on the air with Professors Lessig and Turley.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
This is sad to see that the Supreme Court, that the hierarchy of our Constitution, our laws, our everything, all the work that was done to rectify the mishaps throughout history,
mm-hmm.
has gone and just put their own opinion and pretty much their own interest into this. It's sad. I say, you know what? If you're being elected to office, you don't need money. What you need is the people's voice, people's, you know, confidence. That's what you need. What do you need money for? To go on air, to rail against your opponent? You know, you don't need it. To go around like back in the days, you know, with the bullhorn and going around and
go straight to the people and get your vote there. But I guess the issue is how to make that happen. And we're looking at options here. William, I appreciate your call. Let's get another one right here. Troy in Iowa City. Troy, you're on the air.
Yes. I'm for the Constitution convention, and I want to be one of those delegates. put me in charge.
All right, you're
now,
ready to
you
go.
Know, now, you do. Do you know anything about me?
Nothing.
Not at all. But as long as we pick someone you like, you're for it. So let's pick me. You don't know anything about me. Pick me as the person in charge of the Constitutional Convention.
You say this is like thumbing through the phone book to decide who's in there. What are you saying, Troy? Is it somebody that you don't want in there? What's your point?
No, what's going to happen, if you did call this, mm-hmm. is everyone say, well, let's elect all these Al Gore people, the global warming people. Those are the good people. Let's pick these Sarah Palin people. Those are the people we want. Hey, pick me. Pick me being in charge.
Yeah, go straight to Iowa City and bring Troy in here. Lawrence Lessig, how about it? If we would have a constitutional convention, you know, Troy's point is, what's to keep the same interests that are so powerful right now from guiding the results of that convention, maybe even to doubling up the power that they've got?
Well, I would hope that the rules of the convention would exclude any sitting member of Congress or anybody who doesn't pledge to not run for Congress for the next 10 years, because I think that the system's got to be set up to reflect not the insiders, but people who want to change the way the insiders work. Now, the thing about a convention is it doesn't change anything on its own. All it can do is make a proposal. And, of course, any of us can make proposals. Jonathan's made a proposal. I've made a proposal. Mm-hmm. Lots of people have made proposals. But this is a proposal that would come out of a process where all sides would have an opportunity to consider and deliberate about it and then send their ideas to the states so the states can decide whether they like them or not. Now, if 12 states oppose any proposal, it doesn't become part of the Constitution. If you look at America right now, if you think there's such a thing as a red state and a blue state, then there's solidly 12 red states and solidly 12 blue states. So neither side should worry that in some sense the other is going to take over the Constitution. But I think that, you know, to look at our problems and to say we should just sit around and wait for the Supreme Court to decide again how to change our Constitution is not enough. We've got to organize and do what a democracy is supposed to do, which is to convince each other what the right answer is and to get that enacted into law.
Practically speaking, Jonathan Turley, do you think we could put together such a convention that would not be more or less taken over by the powers that be?
Well, we can't do much worse, can we? I certainly agree with Lawrence. I think it's a very important thing not to let anger and apathy stop reform. That, mm-hmm. Those are the allies to the incumbents and to the power holders in our country. They want you to be angry but also apathetic. They want you to feel hopeless. And you're not. Framers gave considerable power to change the system, and I think that we can. And one of the tests, by the way, short of a constitutional convention, is to demand from legislators that they do things like pass laws ending gerrymandering, changing the primary system to the top vote-getters. Things like that are wonderful litmus tests. But in terms of a constitutional convention, I think Lawrence is absolutely correct. People need to remember that our constitutional convention that originally came forth with this magnificent document was composed of people that could barely stand each other in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
And our framers did not get along very well. I mean, Jefferson referred to the Federalists in control as the reign of the witches. So it's not that we invented this type of poisonous politics. The problem is,
but it doesn't have to be a love fest. You're saying
right, and I think that Lawrence has a very good idea when he says, you know, we need to limit the convention. I would actually, keep out anyone who is serving in office, since it's going to have a big impact on state and federal offices. But I think that he's right that you can have these types of very basic requirements.
Let's go to Abraham in Salt Lake City, Utah. Abraham, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi Tom.
Hi.
I got. Couple of things, actually. First of all, what happened to put in a cap on how much the candidate gets to spend? Because mm-hmm. this way, you know, everybody's going to have to spend the same thing. It's not how much more money you got.
Mm-hmm.
And who got the more money get the best seat or
yep.
one of those things. So if you put a cap, then people, you know, it's going to have to be controlled more or less on how much of your own money should be in there and how much of the donations.
Yeah.
And they have to figure out who is donating. You have to itemize who's donating, and then virtually, you know, could put that against the agendas that the candidate himself is coming up with. He has to have some agenda. He has to have some promises. You have to have what background he's coming from and what is he going
to
be.
But we've been trying for a long, long time to legislate campaign finance reform, and some of those reforms have just been rolled way back, Abraham. I take your point. Let's try and do it. But Lawrence Lessig, you know, can we do it with laws, given the Congress we've got, given the history we see now, given the Supreme Court ruling in Citizens United? Can we legislate our way out of this?
Well, I think the one legislation we can enact that would be an enormous step forward is what we've been talking about, citizen-funded elections, the Fair Elections Now Act. That would change the dynamics dramatically. Now, of course, if you wanted to limit spending, the Supreme Court has basically forbidden that, at least for independent expenditures. And that the only way around that is to amend the Constitution. I personally wouldn't support limits on spending. I would rather have a system where we fund elections adequately so that people don't have to worry all the time about raising money. But I don't support limits because supporting limits means it's very hard for outsiders to get into office because they're basically on the same level playing field with the incumbent, and the incumbent obviously has an enormous advantage. So these are hard questions that, again, I think is a reason for having a serious deliberation in the context of a convention. But the thing that we can do right now, and we have a site, you know, Change Congress has a site called fixcongressfirst.org, which you can go to right now and help, is to get this Congress to enact citizen-funded elections. And it's possible if the president got behind it, I think it would happen. But it's certainly the people have got to get behind it right now to make that change.
Let's go to Reed in Waltham, Massachusetts. Reed, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show as always.
Thanks.
I'm a healthcare executive and have been very interested and involved with this, obviously, the healthcare bill. And one of the things we've learned as we consult with the staffers in Congress, with representatives and senators and so on, they're not afraid of the general election. They're afraid of their primaries. And this gets back to the point raised by your guest about the primary system. If they don't pass a litmus test of being red enough or blue enough, they'll never get to the general election. That's something that I think bothers us, even us in industry, who really, believe it or not, we actually try to have the best interest of the public in mind. But the issue is these guys and gals are really limited to, for example, if you're coming from a red state, you've really got to be pro-life. If you're coming from a blue state, you've got to be a strong supporter of the public option, or you can't get through your primary.
So you can't find a centrist out there maybe to work with, and maybe we can't find answers that we might be able to work with.
Yeah, here in Massachusetts, this famous senatorial election which just occurred, as I understand it, 51% of Massachusetts, surprising to the rest of your audience, are centrists, are independents. And yet the choice we had coming out of the two primaries was a very red or a very blue. We were never offered the other. If there had been no primary, but it could have been the top four or five candidates, I would argue that one of the two gentlemen that ran against Ms. Coakley in the Democratic side might very well have emerged victorious because they're much more centrist.
Yeah, Reed, it's a great point. Let us pick it up. Jonathan Turley, here's I guess, your point exactly, but it sounds as though you're thinking it may take a constitutional amendment to make it happen. I mean, are the folks in there now going to make the kind of changes to primaries that would put them up against more competition?
Well, that is the problem indeed, and I think Reed's point is, he put it very, very well. The great irony about the current debate is that the majority of voters in this country have very little impact on the political system. The entire political dialogue, the entire political system is driven by the most radical ends of the debate. And those people in the middle really have nowhere to go, and that's by design. I think that it's not an accident that these parties have really sold the country on this blue-red state sort of paradigm, and it works so well for incumbents. But you can change that even without a constitutional convention. You can adopt a primary system that allows the top two vote-getters, even if they're both Republican or both Democrat, to run in that general. I think you would see a tremendous change, because I think Reed is absolutely correct. And I think that what we're talking about here really is part of the important aspect of this dialogue. We need to move away from the type of script that the two parties give us. We need to move away from the idea that our politicians will reform themselves and start to demand very specific reforms And if our politicians don't give those to us through legislative means, then we need to get them ourselves through a constitutional convention.
This polarization, though, is not unrelated to the funding issue, because what politics tells us is that it's easier to raise money if you're an extremist. So you're an extremist on the right, you raise more money. Extremist on the left, you raise more money. So extremism supports the fundraising Congress, and it's no surprise that the character called a moderate Republican or a conservative Democrat is increasingly a rare species on Capitol Hill.
Let's go to Bob in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Bob, you're on the air.
I would be for the Constitutional Convention, but for the purpose of increasing the number of representatives. The population of the country has grown, but the number of representatives stays at 435 congressmen and 100 senators. I would be more for increasing that number to 4,350 congressmen and 1,000 senators. That would dilute their power and negate the influence of the political action committees and lobbyists. And then that way, maybe I could get an appointment to see my congressman.
Bob, I love it. Lawrence, what do you think? A Congress of 4,000? I mean, I have heard people say, as our GDP has grown, each one of those people in Congress now has so much throw weight in that enormous economy that the money will be lavished on them. Maybe we just need more of them. Get them closer to Bob in Bowling Green.
Well, there are not many people who think we need more politicians in the world, but it might be right. It might actually help things. But I think it's not going to help things if that's the only change that we make, because if they still have to be funded on the existing system, they're going to be even more hungry to be finding the money that they need from special interests to get into office if there are 10 times the number running as there are right now. So it's one of the ideas I think we need to think about. It's certainly radically different from the way the framers imagined, because they had a system that was much more representative in the sense of a smaller number of districts for each representative. But I don't think that change alone is going to change the dynamic of the fundraising Congress.
Paul in Omaha, you're on the air, Paul.
And I think one of the problems that I see is that we've got people who are too vested in their jobs. They're, you know, all year long, their whole job is simply to stay in office, and so they have no other interest other than protecting their jobs. If we go back to the old system where we had citizen legislators where they had a job somewhere else and only met part-time during the year, did the important business, they wouldn't fill the entire calendar with make-work simply to justify their jobs. They would simply come do the important business, let the government run on its own, but simply focus on what the critical issues is. We've got professional politicians whose job is simply to protect their job.
So have them out there, I don't know, splitting rails or chopping wood or something the other half the year. Paul, thanks for your call. Jonathan Turley, do you feel momentum toward this now? The Tea Party folks have been in the streets clamoring for change. Progressives are really up in arms. Do you think something might actually get up, off the ground here?
I think it just might. I'm very hopeful that this level of anger can be harnessed and really used to push us towards reform. But I think that we also have to remember, and this, I'm referring to your last caller, is what we've heard here now is what a constitutional convention would be like. That is all these ideas, expanding to 5,000 members or having citizen members, are ideas that should be discussed. I personally do not like term limits, and I also don't think Congress could effectively run with part-time members anymore. I mean, when you do something like that, you effectively hand over the government to faceless bureaucrats and aides. You know, I was the advisor to the Florida legislature for a year, and they have limits. And that state has the most powerful staff members in the world because they effectively run the state, as do lobbyists in Florida, because you don't have members that have any experience. So I think these are all ideas that are worthy of debate. The key here is for people to believe that it is possible, because the establishment in this country will do everything to say it's not possible. You've got to work with us. It has to be incremental changes, reforms that we approve for ourselves. We have to break out of that confine and believe it is possible. And that's the level of optimism that actually created the Republic. I don't know where it went to, but it seems to be gone, where people are very angry, but they also feel hopeless.
Lawrence Leslie, we've just got 30 seconds here, but what about the fear factor? You know, will we be as worthy, would we, as the framers if we open up this Constitution in a convention?
Oh, I think we're more worthy. I think we know more. I think we have a better experience. And I agree with Jonathan, we just need to push it. And I would urge people to do something rather than be passive about it. Go to fixcongressfirst.org and you can do something today.
Well, we're very grateful to each of you for your perspectives on this. Feels like there could be some traction out there. Lawrence Lessig at Harvard University joining us today from New York, White Plains. Lawrence, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Jonathan Turley, George Washington University, joining us from Arlington, Virginia. Jonathan, great to have you here again.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation at and get our podcast at the website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.